please the Court, Heather Guarino on behalf of Appellant Ernest Castlewoods II, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. District Court committed reversible error by failing to properly apply the limited inquiry in 1915G and failing to find that Mr. Woods adequately pled imminent harm of serious physical injury in two distinct ways. First, that by misclassifying him as a sex offender, they put him at risk of being stabbed and threatened and potentially killed. The second is that by failing to provide adequate medical care, he was put at risk of injury, and by failing to provide the surgeries that he had requested. 1915G is a threshold question. It's supposed to be extremely limited. It's not supposed to go into the merits of the action. And this Court has cautioned that it is not supposed to be an overly detailed inquiry, that it's not the Court's position to determine whether or not it's serious enough, whether or not there's enough beatings, only whether there has been allegations to show that there is some conduct that creates an ongoing risk of harm. As to the first point that Mr. Woods has raised, being misclassified as a sex offender is known to be something that creates imminent harm.
So is it being misclassified or is it being classified? Would every sex offender be able to challenge their classification if we rule for your client?
No, Your Honor. They would have to be alleging something where the relief that the court could seek, that they can seek in the court, is something that could be granted. In this case, misclassification is Mr. Woods' complaint, because by misclassifying him, the Inspector General has acknowledged that sex offenders are more likely to be assaulted, they're more likely to be the subject of bias, and they're more likely to be killed. And so by misclassifying him, they put him at risk. And that is
how much more likely does it need to be for the risk to be enough to get up around your three strikes?
All that he has to plead is that there is risk of injury, and then it moves to the next screening stage.
Well, is that right? Is it risk of injury, or is it imminent risk of serious injury, or something like that? I mean, is it at a higher standard than that? I mean, everyone has a risk of injury. I have a risk of injury every time I cross the street. So how do we know that this risk of injury is enough?
As the court said in Andrews, that as long as the pleadings make a facial allegation, it's a plausible allegation, but that they're going to be injured. In Williams, this court dealt with this specific issue of sex offenders and misclassification, and it found that it was appropriate that because there was threats and a likelihood of being beaten, that that was sufficient.
Were those threats directed to the inmate herself?
This
court goes to what is alleged here or not alleged here on behalf of Mr. Woods.
Mr. Woods alleges that he was at risk of being stabbed, and that he's in ongoing imminent harm. The difference in Williams is that she was given an opportunity to submit briefing and an OSC, and Mr. Woods was not permitted to have that same opportunity. And if he was given that opportunity, he could submit a declaration and make similar allegations to what Ms. Williams has asserted.
I'm going to say this. I don't understand the answer to Judge Friedland's first question, which was, why does the laws apply to anybody who's classified as a sex offender? I mean, we don't classify people as sex offenders in order to get them stabbed, right? They're getting stabbed, they're getting put in danger, is a byproduct of being classified. And why couldn't anyone say, well, I've been classified as a sex offender, I'm now in danger, I get fined?
But there's a difference between being classified and actually being a sex offender. And the prison system has put Mr. Woods.
I'm sorry, do you know what you mean if you're an actual sex offender? What is the difference?
The difference is that there's a nexus between what's being alleged as.
It was being alleged I'm a sex offender, I'm in danger in prison, I want more protection. I should not be as exactly the kind of claim that, in that regard, being an actual sex offender and being a misclassified sex offender, it's no difference in the degree of danger you're in, the images or anything else.
And I would submit, Your Honor, that that's correct. And if they could assert a claim in the second phase as to whether or not the court could grant relief to assist in removing that imminent danger, then the case would proceed in the same manner.
Well, presumably that is for more protection, to be declassified in order to avoid that. I don't know.
And those, we have to look at the phrase that we're in the review. PLRA.
I mean, what's the easier time to, trying to take cases that involve individual threats, individual employees and trying to apply to a class, and this is always a, because your client has not actually gotten, at least not doing these papers, gotten national status, right?
My client is afraid to submit documentation to the court in writing that he's received actual threats.
Okay, then, you say that, but who knows?
Right.
Maybe it's not. I'm not suggesting it's your intent, I'm telling you the truth. I'm just saying, your client is telling you things. It could be true, it could be false. So, how is he different from anybody else in that class? Are we at that point opening up? If by your argument, are we not opening up whole class-wide exceptions to the sex rights rule?
You're not opening up class-wide exceptions because this is only the first of two proof-spreading phrases that likely happen in succession. One is that you're in imminent physical harm, and the second is that you can actually state a claim that has merit. And so, the court has to permit people to be able to come in and seek relief when they are actually in imminent harm. And then whether or not the court can grant that relief can be addressed at the second stage.
So what would be wrong if, for your client's future safety, with us saying you can't get this imminent harm exception unless you have more allegations? I mean, he's not going to be able to win without more allegations, because eventually he's going to need to tell the court. So if we say, look, you need more allegations, this case has to be dismissed, he gets another strike, but he files again with more allegations and he can make them, and he gets that one through. What's the difference?
Because in this case, sex offenders are so much more at risk that you put him in a catch-22. Once he's mislabeled as a sex offender, then what you're suggesting is that he has to wait to actually get stabbed or get the threat, and it puts him at risk of being killed when he should be able to seek relief immediately, so he's not at risk. This is a situation where the prison, what he's alleged is that the prison has put him at more risk than he would be on his own. If a rapist is a sex offender, and it is their current status that gives them the point that they are at risk. In Mr. Wood's case, he's pleading that if he was labeled properly, he would not be at risk at all. And it is the prison that has done something that puts him at risk, and therefore he should be able to plead that. And because of how high, it's double that sex offenders are going to be at risk of being killed, that he shouldn't have to be stuck in that catch-22 where someone has to make the threat. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
May it please the court, Neilman for Warren Adams. The imminent danger exception is designed for genuine emergencies for cases where time is of the essence and the potential consequence is serious physical harm. In this case, the R suffix by itself poses no danger to any inmate. In fact, the R suffix is merely an internal use by prison officials to help in determining where to house inmates. Same way they use codes.
Well, he alleges that these things are known to other inmates. I don't know how this happens, but all sorts of things happen in prison that I can't imagine how they happen. Guns, drugs, get into prison. I don't know how they do it, but obviously things happen
actually received threats from members of the Tulane prison gang. In this case, we have no such allegations. Mr. Woods simply relied on the sort of generic allegation that sex offenders are at increased risk for harm, and that also presupposes that all sex offenders are equal. Not so. Mr. Woods is classified as a sex offender not because of child molestation, for example, but instead he has a doctorate.
But the other inmates wouldn't know that, would they? Isn't the R of general designation?
The R sentence is for jury use only, so inmates would not know about it unless somehow.
But he alleged that they will, so don't we have to take that as given for purposes of the motion to dismiss?
But he makes no allegations that, for example, that inmates who have a history of masturbating in front of officers, as in this case, classification of that history poses an imminent threat to his safety.
But I think that's his point, right? So his point is he's got a designation that makes it seem like he's rapist or child molester or whatever, and in fact he says he's not. So it seems like your argument kind of goes in his favor.
Well, what's terribly missing from Mr. Woods' complaint and many complaints, the objections to the R&R is it makes no allegations that he makes no about his classification history.
Could you say that again? I don't understand what you just said.
He makes no allegations in any of his pleadings below, including the objections to the report and recommendation, that inmates know about his classification. For example, in Williams, the inmate alleged made a particular showing that staff there spread rumors about her designation. We have no such allegations in this case.
Well, he hasn't alleged any threats, but hasn't he alleged that the R does put inmates at more risk because other inmates do generally know? I mean, he's alleging it as a general matter anyway.
So that argument actually just looks for a category exemption for sex offenders. That also assumes that, for example, in 2013, when Mr. Woods filed his complaint, we had about roughly 21,000 inmates who were required to register. In other words, just by sex offenders in the prison system. And I don't think he can plausibly say that all 21,000 inmates are walking around at that time in danger.
So how do you respond to the appellant's catch-22 argument that if it is known as a general matter that they are at risk because of the prison classification that others know it, but you have to wait for some actual harm to you before you can show the evidence of the physical harm that's required to get past the three-strike rule? How do you respond to that?
Well, one response, Your Honor, is we skip this official's a chance to address the risk. He makes no allegation in this case that he deserves an imminent threat to his safety, that he told prison officials that there was such a threat and that they did nothing. As was the case in Williams, which, she allegedly told prison officials that there was a threat to her safety and there was nothing done. So,
how do we know? So your prior statement was that it's impossible that all 21,000 inmates are at risk. How do we know that?
Well, otherwise we would have a huge report of inmates dying.
Well, maybe we do. I mean, we do have lots of violence in prisons, right? I mean, how do we know that they're not at risk?
I mean, we do recognize that there's some risk to inmates on any given day. The statute, there's two qualifiers. Number one, the danger has to be imminent. And second, the risk of harm has to be serious. Otherwise, if we allow inmates just to give this generic allegation of imminent danger, that virtually everyone can qualify, including gang members and rival gang members at the prison, and or any inmate in a level 4 prison. And the other thing that undercuts Mr. Woods' claim of imminent danger is timeliness. He came as in his pleadings below that the allegations concern events between 2007 and 2009.
That goes to the medical care, right? Not the sex offender status.
He's on the sex offender status, but that's what he was classified as. That's when he received the R subjects in 2007.
But how was that limited in 2009? And the medical care issue, I think, stops in 2009, but there's no allegation that his designation stopped in 2009, is there?
Well, the point I'm making is that despite the fact that he got the designation in 2007, if there was really any danger to Mr. Woods, prisoner is still waiting until 2003. When he comes out in 2013, almost 6 years or 6 years later, and timeliness is important because a claim of imminent danger loses force as more time elapses between defendant's action or inaction.
Well, why can't we, isn't it possible that starting in 2011, files became more available to other inmates, or in 2012, people started understanding what they are meant to mean? The fact that he was designated is only one of the components of the risk he's alleging, isn't it?
Well, we're still getting to sort of this general risk of harm to inmates in general, and the statute's pretty clear that you've got to at least flesh some facts to possibly show that there's some present threat to your safety that you need court intervention right now. And whatever harshness there is to this rule, and especially in this Woods case, he does have options. He can go to state court. He can file civil action with a D waiver. He can also seek state habeas relief to challenge his hard subjects, and thus plead a charge to Mr. Woods.
Thank you.
In Williams, the answer this court specifically stated that alleging that there is an ongoing harm is sufficient. And as long as they show that it's something that will create imminent danger to people like him specifically, or those similarly situated, then that's sufficient. And the Inspector General's report rebuts the conclusion of the appellee that the R is known, that it is something that creates bias both of the prison guards and the other inmates, and puts the inmate with the R designation at imminent risk of being assaulted or extorted. And the AP did a search on the correctional facility that showed that although only 15% of inmates are sexual offenders, that they constitute 30% of the fatalities in prison, which is why his allegations that placing, misclassifying him as a sex offender puts him at risk. And that should be sufficient for the limited inquiry of 15G that the court should look at to determine whether he's made the risk. And it just goes to the next step, which is he stated a claim to have merit. And that is why the exception exists.
Thank you, sorry.